Today, I'm going to give you guys some insider tips into how the creator economy works with our special guest.
Welcome to the Women of YouTube podcast. This podcast is hosted by me, Desiree Martins. Every week, I'm going to be showing up in your earbuds to inspire you on your YouTube journey with killer interviews with women YouTube creators, deep dives into the inner workings of how YouTube works, and discussing all the things about YouTube culture and the impact it is having on our world.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with vidIQ, where they help you maximize your video's YouTube reach by studying titles, descriptions, tags, and playlists relevant to your subject matter, while also studying your competitors to help you know exactly what you should be doing for your YouTube growth.
So if you're a female creator looking to grow your channel, level up your content, and learn from the best women creators on the platform to get you on your way to YouTube success and future-proofing your income, this is the perfect place for you. Let's do this.
What's up, ladies? Welcome to the episode of the Women of Video podcast. I am so excited, as always, to be up in them earballs to give you the latest and greatest of all things that have to do with content creation. Now, I have been talking with Kaya for quite a long time. We met at VidCon East, and we are part of this creator leadership summit that they did there. And we just really connected and have been following each other's work for a long time. She is a reporter for The Information, which is a content creation based, the information as a whole, like, does tech and stuff, but her corner of it is in the content creator space. They're doing this really great big event they did last year about the creator economy in April, and they're going to be doing it again this coming year. So obviously stay tuned for details about that. But I talk with Kaya a great deal about, like, the state of the creator economy, what's going on, what can we expect? And we deep dive into some really specific questions and issues around women in this space. Like, why are we continuing to make less money? How can we make change? And what can we do to stand out? And we actually got into some really interesting origin stories about the creator economy. And surprise, surprise, no shocker, it all started with women anyway. So let's just dive into the conversation with Kaya. And I hope that you got as much out of it as I did. I'm very excited to talk with you today, Kaya, because we're going to be diving into a different side of the creator economy in regards to how women creators exist in it, and I think it's going to be really good. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first of all, tell us what it is that you do and why you're here.
Yeah, so I'm a reporter at The Information, which is a tech publication, and I came on about 3 years ago to start our creator economy newsletter. It has more than 100,000 subscribers now, and I cover the business side of the creator economy. So both what the big social platforms are doing, how creators are building businesses, startups, talent management, everything in between. So anything that that touches the business side of this world.
I love that. Okay, so we're recording this at the beginning of 2024. So tell us, what are the things that you are seeing on the future landscape for the creator economy as a whole?
Yeah, there's a few things. I mean, I think on the startup side, in 2021, you saw this boom in funding, and that was spurred by both the rise of TikTok and the pandemic, where a lot of people were at home and had more time to spend online. And then you also had TikTok, which was just minting a whole new generation and type of creator. It really opened the floodgates to make it so much easier for anyone to become a creator. So venture capitalists got super excited and interested in the space and poured billions of dollars into creator economy startups. But now a lot of that funding has dried up and a lot of these companies didn't actually find a lot of traction or customers. There's a few different reasons for that. I think creators already have, you know, Google Sheets and other systems that they need. So a lot of these kind of paid services and tools just didn't really work out for them. So I think on the startup side, we're going to see continued struggle there just because they're not able to raise more funding. They haven't been able to profit. So I think we're going to see struggle there. But on the flip side, I think creators themselves are only growing. I mean, you're seeing from sports to the NFL and YouTube have a big deal now and are bringing creators to games to, I spoke with a cybersecurity startup the other day who is boosting their influencer marketing budget by 50% this year. So you're seeing a lot of growth. So you have these diverging stories, I think, right now in the creator economy.
Why do you think it is? Like, do you think that the fact that we're seeing a drop in investiture into the creator economy from like a VC perspective. What does that like say about the creator economy as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, I would think one thing to note is that startups across the board, besides AI startups, which is the hot thing right now, are struggling to raise funding. So this is something that's happening across sectors. But I think there was a little bit of a disconnect between these startups and the needs of the creators. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, I mean, I'm sure you can relate to this. I mean, you have to be the CEO of your company as well as the face of it, where you have to create the content, but you also have to do the back end and the taxes and all this stuff. So a lot of these startups thought they could come in with kind of these software tools and help with that. But there was just a disconnect between the actual services, the pricing. Creators have already figured out ways to do this. So part of me thinks some of it is just a little bit early, where some of these tools maybe are just not quite where they need to be. And two, it's a really hard customer segment to service because creators are individuals. There's millions of them. They have such different and diverse businesses that it's much harder to create a tool that works for all of them. So I think those are some of the factors, and some it might just be a little bit too early for some of these tools as well.
I have kind of felt like everything like that already existed, they just slapped creator on it and tried to like make it work. And it's very one of those things, like it almost felt like they didn't understand who we were or what we were doing or what our needs were, because I think that a lot of them thought that so many people were creator businesses. I think they were thinking about the over 5 million subscriber brands who have all these different things, like that was the customer, when there's such a massive amount of creators in just that middle class creator segment that I think is underserved and underutilized. And I think that if a lot of these tools honestly would come together and make like a merged platform that supported like a lot of tools in one space, it probably do really well. We talked to the founder of Rela a couple weeks ago on the podcast, and she was talking about how she's like, I just wanted one place that I could like do project management and planning and social media scheduling and like have my team on. And like, I didn't want to have to go get like a social media management software and have Notion and have Basecamp and all these separate tools. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to make one that I want. And I'm sure other creators will need that as well. Because from a cost perspective, it really helps.
It adds up.
Down and minimize them. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And I think a lot of these founders were like, okay, this is going to be my niche and then I can maybe expand from there. But it became just an explosion of these platforms where it's like, you need to pay X amount per month for each of these tools. So I agree with you. I think there haven't been all encompassing solutions for every single thing you need.
Okay. What else can we see ahead from the creator economy that really will affect creators specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're obviously in an election year. So I think we're going to see creators have a really big role in campaigns this year. You know, the Biden campaign, I think the Biden administration has invited creators to the White House for briefings. They had their first creator holiday party. So I think we can expect him to really utilize creators in the campaign. And two, I think there is a lot of movement in just creators starting offline brands as well. We've seen it a little bit. You know, Emma Chamberlain has Chamberlain Coffee, which she's raised venture funding for, Mr. Beast with Feastables. But you're also seeing creators of all kind of different sizes that are, you know, looking at creating various brands. So I don't think you have to be the DiBellios to create a brand. I think Katie Storino is a really interesting example. She's a fashion creator on mostly on Instagram, and she started a company called Mega Babe. And she has kind of various different products, and she speaks to kind of plus size women. So she's created a business there. Summer Fridays, I think, is another great example of a beauty company. They're in Sephora, started by Mariana Hewitt and Lauren Ireland. So I think we're going to see more of that, because I think creators also want to get off the content hamster wheel at some point. So being able to create brands, and of course there are startups that are helping with that, and other companies. Whaler has a studio where they're helping their talent as well create offline businesses. So I think that's going to be commerce. And then you have TikTok Shop as well, which I think I'm bullish on. I think it's so driven by creators. And so I think that's another opportunity.
Creators of all sizes,
yeah.
Too.
Yes, all different kinds, all different products. So, I mean, they are investing a lot of money into it. And some of the discounts are going away, I will say. Black Friday, they had some really great discounts on TikTok. But I think even without the discounts, creators are at the heart of those things. I think commerce is going to be a big theme this year, too.
Yeah, I also feel like another thing that I am noticing in the creator economy that is something for all of us to watch is we're really seeing where the value as creators lies. And I think that we as creators are trying to figure out who we are in the world where we're driven by these tools, right? The, if they obey by their rules and their ways of doing things, the YouTube, the TikTok, the Instagrams, all that kind of stuff. But also like the challenge of being people who want to change or evolve. I know that a lot of creators have just walked away from their channels lately. They're like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to be this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm tired of this. We've seen people who have risen up and found ways to systemize operations. Like we've seen with Ali Abdul, where he is like, you know, has his new book out. He has built this whole business and brand in place that allows for it all to function, where he's just at the top. He talks to one person, his COO, and gets things done. Recently, Matt, and I can never say his last name, but he talks about how he got rid of his entire team. Yeah. And decided to just like go back to being a one person thing because it was so much stress, so much work, so much expectation, and all of the joy of creating and operating had been sucked out of it because he had turned a creative business into a business, a company that had all these expectations and requirements of him. And I feel like this year is going to be a lot of creators trying to figure out who they are in this space, if they want to be creators, how they can evolve, how they can do more, you know, how they can like branch off and create new channels that are with based on who they are and what they want to do now. I know I'm doing that. So I feel like there's a lot of like creators just are trying to are on like the what's next path.
Yes.
And it's really interesting because we know what we want, but there's what the business side of it, the platform side of it is expecting us to do in order for us to exist there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you see that, right? Colin and Samir, for example, obviously they are known for their show on YouTube, but they have branched out and done a newsletter. And that's been, I think, a big driver for them. It's grown and they cover kind of the creator economy for creators. Okay. So you're seeing that as well. I'm seeing other creators too branch out into newsletters and other mediums that they have more control over, right? I mean, obviously email has its problems. You can it can get into the spam folder, but at least you're building actually a contact list of your audience rather than on social.
Well, even Colin and Samir are a great example of like doing something else. Like they started their creator support YouTube channel in addition to the Colin and Samir channel because they're really identifying, okay, this over here is where all of the big creator interviews happen. And this over here is everyday regular conversations from our podcast. And they understood that they could not work together because people came for the face on this one, but they come for the information on this one. You can see the real split audiences on those platforms as well.
Yeah, definitely. Smart.
So, okay. So one of the things that I would love to dive into within your knowledge and with what you do as a reporter who was investigating and talking to people and this stuff, you have some unique insights into where women sit and what's happening in the creator economy space. Now, I've been very bullish on data around women in this space, and there's not a ton of it. There hasn't been in the past. But we do have some things that have come out over the course of time. Some of the things that like the Take Creative Control is a nonprofit that releases their creator economy report. And they've talked about a great deal how women make 56 cents on the dollar compared to men in the creator economy. When you look at the highest paid creators, the vast majority of them are men. And you could even see like a few years ago that like they did the top like 20, like the top 10, and it was like only two were women and they were, and one was a kid. And so it was this idea, it's like women are not holding these high places in this space. So I'm curious as to what your data shows is like what's happening for women in the creator economy space.
Yeah, I mean, this whole industry, I think, has really been driven by women. I mean, I was reading Taylor Lorenz's book, Extremely Online, and she has a whole chapter about kind of the early origins of the creator economy. And much of it is from mommy bloggers. Even before Facebook and Instagram and TikTok, women were just blogging online and sharing about their lives. And they kind of laid this modern blueprint for the creator economy. And they were vilified in the media for doing that. And they were talking about breastfeeding and postpartum depression and these topics that were very taboo at the time that now we talk about a lot freely online. And they kind of laid this blueprint of just kind of sharing and being raw and authentic online and then being able to monetize that. So women, I think, have been at the forefront of this industry since the beginning of the web and people sharing online. And it, if you, it's, I feel you on the stats because this is a challenge of my job as well. There isn't, I would love like a US census on the creator economy and someone to really take a good whack at it. But there was a report last year from influencer marketing firm Azia. And they actually found that women get 77% of deal flow of sponsorships, yet men are making in 2022, which is their last data, 1.2 times the amount per post. That's narrowed a little bit over time. In 2019, it was 1.9 times. The exception, which was interesting, was on Instagram stories. So women are making a little bit more money there, which was interesting. But since 2015, female creators have overwhelmingly dominated deal flow. And last 2022 was the first time the figure dipped below 80%. So it is really crazy if you think about that, that, you know, majority, I think it's safe to say the majority of creators are women. They're getting the majority of the deal flow, yet they're still making less money per post. I mean, it's great to see that narrowing a little bit. But yeah, I think many of them are trendsetters and people of color as well are trendsetters in this space. And I, you know, hopefully over time that gap is just gets smaller and smaller.
Look, I'm really sorry to interrupt, but did you know that YouTube is the world's second biggest search engine? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but that's why every creator truly needs to be using vidIQ to grow their YouTube channel. vidIQ's tech helps you tailor your video ideas to match what people are searching for right now on YouTube. And once you're ready to upload, well, it starts optimizing and getting you all the details that you need to make sure your videos are getting noticed. If you really want to dive in more and get started for free, please head over to thewomenofyoutube.com/vidIQ to get started on this YouTube channel changing tool that is going to make things so much easier for you. All right, let's get back to it. Why do you think it is that women, even if we are women as a whole, like we are the big financial decision makers in households. We're the ones that tend to spend more on things. We tend to shop more, buy more, go more, do more. And especially because we're such social creatures by nature.
Yeah.
At the same time, when you look at like attention and fame and notoriety, women are almost never listed as part of those recognized things. Now, like we have data at Women of Video that shows that less than 12% of YouTube's top trending videos are from women-based channels. Yeah. And when we pull the data too, it's also women who are with men, like they were a couple or a family that was part of that. And so it's like, why is it that there aren't women who are being idolized in the same sort of way that we have Mr. Beast, Logan Paul, KSI, you know, all of those people? The one that tends to come up the most is Emma Chamberlain.
Yep.
And it just, it's one of those things for me that I find so interesting that the stories of other women aren't there, but also there aren't women that are there.
Yeah. I think right now it does feel like YouTube in particular feels very male dominated. Like a lot of the top stars. I mean, if you think you had Lily Singh, you know, you have had high profile female creators. Mm-hmm. I think it's just unfortunately, it's a reflection of other industries as well, right? Like you see this, you know, if you look at the CEOs of companies in the US, it's very overwhelmingly male as well. So I think it's just kind of a reflection of other industries as well. But you do have the D'Amelios. I mean, Addison Rae, I do think TikTok kind of opened the door for a lot of different types of creators. But it's, I don't know if it's in the negotiations and the talent managers or what's really happening, but, hopefully we will start to see more female voices, but I think it's just, it's unfortunately it tracks with also the wage gap in other industries as well.
I'd like to throw into the ring also to another segment of women that are not idolized or talked about either. And I would even say this is for men as well. When you look at all of the creators who are our leaders in the space, the ones that everyone turns to and uses our measuring stick and our example, the common thread through all of them is they're single. Hmm. None of them are married and none of them have kids. And so it becomes this thing where it's like, why? Again, it's just those kinds of people that we shine a light on, that we care about, that we lift up. And even the ones that have been becoming parents lately, and I know there's been different ones like in our spaces, like, you know, John Uche and all that kind of stuff, you know, he just had a kid, but they're talking about that kind of thing. It's still not a thing that they had to be single and go through this process, become successful, and then they got to be families, but that's still not a massive part of what they do or what they talk about and how they create and find balance. Why? Why is this how what it is? Because it, I feel like it actually gets so interesting too, is what you just talked about, is that like all this kind of was ground laid by mom me bloggers.
Yeah.
Women who were like, I'm trying to figure out how to do something extra, get extra income while staying home with my children because it's something I want to do. It might be a financial reason, it might be an employment reason, whatever it may be. Why is that not ever talked about, ever highlighted, ever cared about?
I think there's always an obsession with like the young generation, right? I'm a millennial and I remember when everything was like, oh, millennial pink and avocado toast. And that was all the headlines. And now it's all about Gen Z. So I think that's part of it as well, is that, you know, yeah, especially some of these creators who have, you know, gone up in the past few years, like there's less risk for them to pour so much into content creation because they don't have families and, you know, a mortgage and all these things to support. I mean, the D'Amelios were living with their parents in Connecticut when they blew up, right? And now they're in LA and they have the Hulu show and all this stuff. And the parents themselves have become creators as well and have helped a lot with the business. But I think that's part of it, is that a lot of, there's just an obsession with Gen Z and young people, and they're able to pour so much of themselves into it in a way that parents aren't always able to. But you also have so many family vloggers and family channels as well. But yes, they're not at the level of Mr. Beast.
Well, and that's the thing. No one's at that level. But yes, there are a lot of creators that are at that level. Mm-hmm. They're at a level of wonderful success, you know, with millions of subscribers and followers, and are living phenomenal dreams and paving ways. But there's no one showing their journey. There's no highlight of how they're making it happen. How, like, there is a real dance and sacrifice, not just time-wise, but financially, around being a creator who is also a parent and like having to do, like, I know I speak from personal experience. I started creating in 2017 on YouTube. So I was 32 years old and I was like, I had two kids under three. I was still breastfeeding one. And my husband was in the military and I was like, we're making this shift because by the time his military contract is up, we need to replace that loss of income. And so it was like, how did I do this? Why I had to outsource, how I was able to execute, how I was like able to get a lot done in a little bit of time. All of these things I figured out, but I had to do them all on my own. Like, no one was roadmapping me. All the people I had to learn about YouTube from were not people who had kids. And they weren't parents. Most of them weren't even married. Yeah. And so it seems to isolate a massive part of our industry.
Yeah. And I think there are those people out there. I mean, I think part of it too is just the image we portray on social media. And maybe this is starting to change, but I think especially Instagram, right? It's like your polished, perfect life. And you're starting to see some, you know, some people be more open and transparent, but then even like the authenticity gets commoditized and then people think it's not genuine because you're hamming it up too much, or, you know, we've all seen like the apology videos and how those are panned. So I think that's part of it too, is just, you're supposed to have this aspirational lifestyle on social media. So the challenges of parenting and doing all these things don't always, I guess, read well, which is unfortunate. But I think too, part of it too, is the creator economy has exploded so much and there are so many different creators. Like going to VidCon in 2019 versus 2022. I mean, 2019, I remember it was the peak kind of Vlog Squad, David Dobrik fandom, and everyone was there, you know, to see him. And he had all these crazy fans there. In the early days of VidCon, you were really going to see like 10 big YouTubers. And now there are so many creators that have so many followers also that, yes, you still have the top people, but it's grown so much, I think, in a really positive way, where there are creators that I could follow that I'm obsessed with that have millions of followers that other people have never heard of and do not know about them because it's just not in their niche. And it's also become, the niches have gotten, I think, more niche than kind of these general lifestyles. So I think maybe that is also part of it, where yes, of course, you see the kind of big names and big earners over and over again, but I think a lot more people are able to make a living off of this in a way that they weren't 5-10 years ago.
Oh, 100%. Like, I also think that we're entering in this interesting era where, and I have some salty, sassy thoughts on this. There's not just one way to be a creator. Just like there's also not one way to be a YouTuber. I see a lot of people, especially on LinkedIn, because that's where I spend a lot of my social time, who are like, if you're not doing this on YouTube, you're going to fail. And I'm like, that is so limiting.
Yeah.
When there are so many different ways to use this platform based on what your business is. You know, it's sort of this idea, it's like YouTube is not a marketing strategy. Social media is not a marketing strategy. Like, let's talk about how this is a part of something and like, here are the bigger things for it. Yeah. I get really sassy about the idea of being a creator just for the sake of being a creator. Like, I just want to be a creator. I'm like, cool, but what's the business attached to it? Well, I'm just going to make really great videos and then I'm just going to get a lot of money. I'm like, but that's not how that works.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how it works at all. Like, even if you have 1 million subscribers, you might not make enough in AdSense to pay your mortgage, let alone any of your bills or your rent. Like, there's a whole like thing that has to go into this. And yes, at the core of it, the front face of it is what we're creating, but it has to be supported by the proper back end. And I feel like this constant message, especially from these big creators, those big single 20 something creators that everyone's idolizing, it's just make the best content possible. Yeah. And I'm like, that's not a business or a business plan or a brand plan. And it just, I feel like for me, I feel like that is constantly sending the wrong message as well.
Yeah. I think also on your point of these kind of top creators, a lot of them too have a lot of shock value in their content in a way that isn't necessarily the style of many women creators. I obviously don't want to generalize too much, but like, if you think about like the giveaways or like early Logan Paul from 5 or 6 years ago, I mean, he was tasing rats on YouTube, right? Like, he was doing these shock things that then get attention. So I think that's part of it as well, where you don't see the D'Amelio sisters tasing rats on TikTok, right? Like, that's not, I mean,
that's a platform difference and a time difference. Right. Like I said, Logan Paul, it was YouTube, the bro culture from all that time ago. TikTok, the emergence in 2020 was, this is the every man's person's platform. And like, we're all just working together to get us through isolation.
Yeah.
And so it's different times, different things that had happened. But we're also seeing this backlash around TikTok and short form content, where it's like, I saw this fantastic TikTok that was talking about like, we live this in this insane time where you can have 1 million followers and no one will recognize you on the street. And if once upon a time, if you got 1 million views on a TV show, you were swamped whenever you tried to go to the grocery store. And it's like, our fame, our numbers, and I'm faming in air quotes here, our fame is so superficial. And the bridge from an online fame to in real life fame is so different. And so there's so much backlash that's happening around short form content, around one, like how shorts is really ruining YouTube, how people on TikTok are able to make valuable communities and transfer them to other places, go to real in life things, all of that kind of stuff. And so it kind of makes me wonder, it's like, well, where should we be creating so that we can have a community in real life that adores us? Like, how do we build that bridge? Like, what does that look like right now?
I love that you said that too, because there's been an obsession with short form video, and you have YouTube and Instagram just chasing TikTok because of the competition among big tech. But actually, there's, like you said, there's so many downsides for short form video. I mean, you're not building the same loyalty often with your audience, like you said. Mm-hmm. So I think short form video is still the fastest way to grow, get a lot of eyeballs, you know, build an audience, but then you have to take that somewhere, right? Like, is it YouTube long form videos? Is it podcasts, right? I'm sure the people that listen to your podcast versus the people that are watching your videos, the podcast listeners are really sitting here with you, right? And listening for 30, 40 minutes. I mean, that's way different than scroll. I mean, you know how many videos you see in 40 minutes on TikTok? I mean, you probably can name one creator that you actually saw in that time frame. So I think it's finding some sort of way to connect deeply with your audience. And it really depends on the creator, right? Like Colin and Samir, newsletter makes sense for them. And that's a way that they're reaching audiences. For someone else, it might be a podcast. It might be live streaming. It might be, you know, maybe it's even Instagram, right? Like some creators post so much on their stories and are answering questions and reposting it and really engaging with audiences. So I think it really depends on the creator, but I think you have to, having a business completely around short form video, I think is very dangerous and is going to be challenging. And two, I mean, same thing with the startups, with them not being able to have VC funding. I don't think that the money that was being thrown around for brand partnerships in 2021 is the same. Like, obviously, it's still going up, but I think brands were really spending super heavily on creators and doing these kind of crazy one-off deals, which I think those are not as readily accessible to creators either. So they really need to have a sustainable business strategy, and they need to find ways to reach audiences that aren't just trying to catch their attention for 5 seconds in a feed that's crowded with other kind of very entertaining videos.
Yeah, I think it's just, we're in such a weird place. I think this is kind of where we're going to start seeing the segmentation. We're going to start seeing the groups of people and how they create in a really good, smart way. Like there's going to be the strategy for how like entertainment creators want to do things. There's going to be strategy for comedians. There's going to be a strategy for the family creators. There's going to be a strategy for people who are using it purely for business. There's a different strategy for like how like major brands like Pepsi, Coke, yeah, all them, like how they're going to be using, you know, YouTube and the creator economy to do things. And I think that the sooner we as creators can figure out what's the path that makes sense for us is going to allow for us to figure out what success is. I know for me, from like my personal objective, I really struggled last year with my channel because I'm like, I want to be YouTube famous. Like all the other people, like I'm this face, I'm this person. I want to be known for this thing and do this stuff. And like my channel was going through all these like ups and downs around like what was hitting, what wasn't hitting. And after looking at the data and seeing like all of the craziness that is that data, yeah, and stuff, I've really come to the conclusion like that my YouTube channel, like where it is right now, is truly an education and resource channel. It is, mm-hmm, not a place where people are going to come like frolicking back every single time I post something, because they might have come to my content to learn about how to use TikTok. And then, yeah, I post something about Facebook and they're like, well, I'm not interested in Facebook, so I'm not going to go watch that. So, mm-hmm, I'm going to be doubling down on doing what I've been doing, which is teaching people about different ways to use the social platforms and do stuff with a very clear understanding that like, this is to fuel a business. Mm-hmm. This is how YouTube is supposed to work to support what I'm doing to sell digital products and get leads into my agency. If I, yeah, want to be YouTube famous, like I have a whole other, and I'm saying again, air quotes, like, yeah, I have this whole other plan for having a brand for my name, it's Desiree, and it's focused on like storytelling and doing this specific thing. And it's actually kind of scary because I don't know what the business quite is attached to that, but it is something that I want to do for this creative outlet. So it's like really embracing the different ways that make sense based on what your business and your objectives are. Yeah. Your objectives do not always need to be, I need to be on the home feed of all of the YouTube stuff, and I need to get a million views on all of my TikTok videos, or I'm worthless. There are, yeah, so many things that in between that to get you where you need to be. And, yeah, you can make a really good income, yeah, without having to be 100,000 to million subscriber creator,
yeah, at all. And often too, once you get to that, the views sometimes can be meaningless, because if you're not building trust with your audience, then it's just kind of viral entertainment, right? Which is okay, but that's the thing that's hard, is you really need to build that connection. And you can't just be like, okay, I want to be a creator because I want to be famous, like you said, right? And the creators too that have smaller followings but have either a niche or super engaged audiences, they can command really, really great brand partnership rates because they have the engagement. And that's what brands want to see. If you have a viral video but no one's clicking through or watching it all the way through, I mean, that's not necessarily a good thing either.
Yeah. I know things were getting really good over in our interview, but I wanted to take a minute to remind you that we now have a new home for the Women of Video community. You can head over to Patreon right now, and we have the link in our show notes that you can go find it there, where we're going to be able to have after show information, we're going to have chats, we're going to have information, and just come together to answer questions and connect and support each other as creators. This whole creator thing can be really confusing and can be really lonely. So let's come together to support each other like the badass women that we are. Head over to patreon.com/womenofvideo to get started now. What do you think it, how do we draw attention to the middle class creator and make that a measuring stick or an obtainable goal for creators?
It's a great question. I mean, I think too, the startups thought that they were servicing that segment, but in reality, like you said, they didn't totally understand what those creators needed or wanted. And it's hard. I mean, how do we define the middle class of creators even, right? Like, is it similar to how we define the middle class just kind of generally in the US? I mean, people throw around that term a lot. And I think the startups have tried like, oh, we're going after the long tail or XYZ, but they haven't totally understood that. In my newsletter, I try to kind of spotlight and talk to creators of all different sizes and of all different businesses. And it's really incredible how even with under 10,000 followers, you can make a full-time living from this.
How would you define a middle-class creator? Like if you got to pick the definition?
That's a good question. I think I would probably have it close to kind of how we think about middle-class generally. I mean, you can, I don't know if it's a number or I don't think size of followers is the right way to do it, because I think you can have 100,000 followers and make $1 million a year. And that, I don't think that's middle class necessarily. So I would probably do it based on income. I would have to think about what exactly that would be. But
I was to define what a middle class creator would be, I would say a person that is using social media tools to create content for a target audience that provides a full-time living for that individual based on their need.
So you think it needs to be full-time? Full-time.
I think a full-time income is kind of where that is. I think that the objective of the middle-class creator and creators in general is to like, I don't want a traditional job. Like, I don't want a corporate America job. I don't want to have to work for somebody else. I want to do this thing on my own where I get to control and create and do this thing, even if it is just for a small amount of time. And I think being able to, I think the income part is a really big part of it. And I think that obviously like what is considered middle class where I live, which is in the suburbs of Michigan, is very different from how like where you live, which is in LA, right?
New York.
Like our income can be totally different. Like what I make, which allows me to have a very comfortable life here, would be probably the same as like having like a 2-bedroom apartment in New York, and it'd be a totally different scenario. And I think that it's really based on like what our like the individual person's needs is within like their space, right? So I think that that is how I would define it, just based on like how I've been talking with people and that experience has happened.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I think I think people used to think of it and segment it by followers, but I just think that that doesn't, like you said, I mean, having 1 million followers doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're super ultra successful, unfortunately, which is crazy.
There was this whole like controversy, and I remember it in VidCon 2022, where it was the only year that TikTok was the title sponsor.
Yep.
And there were all these creators that they had brought in that were TikTok creators, and they were going to do meet and greets, and like no one came. For stuff, and there were plenty of creators that like came to bat for them and were like, this wasn't run well. We didn't get to invite our own people. We didn't have any information. Like we had to rely on them all to do it and just made us look bad, all that kind of stuff. But I still have the argument that I would ask even back. I was like, yeah, but how many people would still show up in that situation if you had had control over it? I've done creator meetups in different cities. I've talked with people like, you have to have a certain level of, I think, connection, and you have to do a lot of things almost outside, I think, of what you're doing as a content creator to really get people to come connect with you in that kind of intimate kind of a way. And especially in a post-COVID world where we're not really interested, like no matter how hard we try, how much we want, we're still not going to stuff in the same kind of way. Yeah. And so I think it's just going to be like, I think that this is kind of that. There's also the other thing that we didn't have before is there's so many creators now that it's hard to like give all your attention and your money to one or a handful.
Yeah. And I don't think that means that those creators necessarily don't have rabid fandoms. But like you said, are they going to travel to Anaheim? I mean, it's very different than when VidCon started, where there was really only a handful of really mega big name stars that everyone wanted to see. And now the attention is spread out. And I would argue like that doesn't mean that those people, that those audiences like don't love those creators in the same way. But like you said, it's just more of a niche kind of different audience. And the way that fame is kind of spread out on the internet has changed a lot.
What do you think it is that creators who are in a growth trajectory, what do you think it is that they should be doing to make sure that they can have longevity on platforms as well as financial stability?
Yeah. I mean, I think they obviously need to be really consistent. That's kind of the number one thing. And two, I think because you're in this, you know, you're on the growth trajectory, it's kind of like the slot machine, right? Like you're getting the dopamine hits of kind of people liking and subscribing and commenting. But I think a lot of creators just get so burnt out in the kind of day-to-day content creation that, you know, whether it's a manager or another creator friend, like creators need to really step back and think about like, okay, what do I want my business to look like a year from now, 5 years from now? What's my plan to kind of diversify either within the social platforms or off the social platforms? Because I think that's what happens is that creators get so, you know, wrapped up in YouTube and creating videos and editing, and that all is so time consuming that they don't have time to kind of step back and be like, okay, what is my longer term game plan here? And that's why you see creators burn out. And like you said, just kind of leave the channel behind, do something else. So kind of thinking about that ahead of time, having some sort of like mentor or manager that can really help you step back is probably the most important thing that they can do. And also, yes, you kind of have to be on every platform, but you know, maybe you focus your energies on like TikTok and Instagram or LinkedIn and YouTube, or, you know, and really double down on those platforms. And I think too, now we haven't really touched on AI a lot, but there's so many AI editing tools now that maybe they can tap into that can help. And just repurposing that content as well is much easier now, I think, than it used to be. But I think it's really just having a plan, because I think so many creators are just like trying to get through the day, trying to get through the week. And it is a very 24/7 job. So it can be hard to really think longer term. But I think those are the creators that are going to be able to sustain, because otherwise, how much longer can you keep doing that?
Yeah. What's your advice for creators that want to adapt and pivot, who are already established in doing something when they're not sure their audience will or the platforms will allow them to?
This is a challenge. And I think we've talked a lot about the positives of TikTok, but the negatives are you go viral for some shtick. You're like, I don't know, you rate coffee shops in New York and suddenly you're the coffee shop New York girl, right? And it's really hard to pivot out of it. I think, you know, on Instagram, for example, there's different polls, there's different ways to engage with audiences. So I think you can kind of try to do that. And I think it all has to be gradual. If you like wake up and you're like, all right, I'm not doing this at all anymore, then it's like really jarring for the audience. So I think one, like communicating with your audience. Two, not being afraid to lose followers. I remember there was a cooking type creator who used to only do like New York City restaurant reviews early on Instagram and was like, I want to be more forward facing. I want to do more of my recipes. And she lost all these followers. She renamed her account. She got all this backlash as if she'd done some horrible thing. But now, you know, years later, her account is stronger than ever and she's in a much happier, better place with it. So I think you have to not be afraid of some of that backlash, but it's how you kind of handle it and gradually do it. I mean, I don't, you know, still sprinkle in those videos that you were doing just to kind of keep that consistency, but you can kind of phase it out a little bit. And two, you're not going to be able to keep doing this. So many creators do this because they're creatives and they love what they do. If you're stuck in a niche and content genre that you don't like, you're going to be miserable. And that's also going to show through your content. So I think it's one, just like communicating with the audience, and two, just kind of gradually expanding into other things and then testing the waters, like seeing how audiences react to that.
I love that. And I think that's really helpful advice for all of us who are in this like creator rut, creator pivot, creator like just struggle because yeah. It really just feels me. Like, especially after going to Vid Summit last year, I just really felt like everyone is in this, like, I don't know what to do now sort of place in life. So, well, I am so grateful for you coming on, Kaya, and brainstorming back and forth and getting that insight into the creator space in just like a different insightful way. Thank you so much for the information about like the state of like creator economy, especially in regards to women. And I really think that my final question for you is going to be, what can we as women creators do to bring women more into the forefront in the way that men currently are dominating, very, very specifically, like in like with finances and like YouTube and stuff like that?
I think it's just collaborating, helping each other. I mean, I love to see what Alex Cooper is doing, right? I think she's such a fascinating example, right? Like, she started with this podcast that was like all about like sex and dating, and now she's getting engaged and she's really changed her content into other stuff. She's doing interviews. She's a great example of someone that has over time evolved and grown up with her audience as well. She's in a different stage of her life now. And it's really interesting to see what she's doing now, where she's having her own business now, where now she's bringing in Alex Earle and helping her grow her podcast. And she's signing other creators. And it's very kind of women led. So I think it's just mentoring each other, collaborating with each other. I mean, you see that with creators all the time. And I think that's, you know, now you have tools on Instagram where you can co-create posts and cross post and promote each other. But I think just in all industries too, like the mentorship and in my career and in creators' careers too, like having people that you can seek advice out of and recommend things is probably the best way to do it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time and expertise, Kaya. It's been a true treat. Remember, you and everyone listening are impossibly amazing. Until next week, peace.
Thank you for listening to the Women of YouTube podcast. We would love to know what you thought about this latest episode. So make sure to tag us with hashtag Women of YouTube with your thoughts.